now.
I don't know who he is behind that mask of his, but I do know when we need him. And we need him now.
I'll call him, sir.
For some reason, the cool bars in Hollywood have to be hard to find and have no sign.
This is the Cocktail Nation.
On the show this week, a book about the tragic life of Hollywood star Carol Lombard has just been released from Michelle Morgan, a gal we've spoken to on the show before, who's a magnificent writer on all things mid-20th century. We take a look at the life of Florence Henderson and Fidel Castro, who both just passed away. Got some gigs for you as well, along with the World of Swank gig guide, plus the swank advice on the importance of ironing your clothes. Are you guilty of that? Let's kick off now. New music from Tom Gabel and The Cat on The Cocktail Nation.
River deep, mountain high, from the sea up into the sky. I'll be here, I'll be there, you'll see my shadow everywhere. From the east to the west, take a ride with me, be my guest. Can you wait, can you stay, until the cat comes out to play? I'll be in seven places at a time, you're watching me leave. As I arrive, through the night, through the day, you can see me making my way. For my love can't be enough. For the goal, for the game, to the fire and into the flame. I will pass while you sleep, up to the sky and to the deep. For the sun, for the moon, from midnight into the noon. I will wait, I will stay, until the cat comes out to play. The time you're watching me leave. As I arrive, through the night, through the day, you can see me making my way. For my love can't be enough. For the goal, for the game, into the fire and into the flame. I will pass while you sleep, up to the sky and to the deep. For the sun, for the moon, from midnight into the noon. I will wait, I will stay, until the cat comes out to play. You know I will stay, until the cat comes out to play. You know I will stay, until the cat comes out to play.
This is the Cocktail Nation, thanks to Ultraswank.net.
Você viu só que amor, nunca vi coisa assim. E passou, nem parou, mas olhou só pra mim.
Se voltar, vou atrás, vou pedir, vou falar. Vou dizer que o amor foi feitinho pra dar. Olha, é como o verão, quente o coração.
Salta de repente para ver a menina que vem.
Ele vem, sempre tem em cima no olhar. E vai ver, tem que ser, nunca tem quem amar.
Hoje sim, diz que sim, já cansei de esperar. Nem parei, nem dormi, só pensando em me dar. Peço, mas você não vem bem.
Deixa então, falo só, eu digo ao céu, mas você vem.
if one day I find
someone who would take my hand and samba to life with me.
Someone to cling to me, stay with me right or wrong. Someone to sing to me some little samba song.
Someone to take my heart and give her heart to me. Someone who's ready to give her the start with me. Oh yes, that would be so nice, nice.
Deixa então, falo só de você, mas você vê.
Cocktail Nation, Marcus Vail, and So Nice. This week on the show, author Michelle Morgan. She's written books about Marilyn Monroe. Now, a brand new book, Carol Lombard, 20th Century Star. Hey.
Hello.
Another book, another gal, because we know you've done books on Marilyn Monroe before. Tell me what interests you about Carol Lombard that you thought I need to put a book together about her.
Well, it was a funny thing. When I'd finished writing my Marilyn book in 2007, all the way back then, I was looking around for somebody else to write about, and I found Vivian Leigh, and I did a bit of research on her, but there was something, nothing about Vivian, nothing horrible about Vivian, but I just could not get into her at all. But then through learning about her, of course, I started to learn about Carol, because Vivian Leigh was in Gone with the Wind and Carol was married to Clark Gable. So I sort of kept seeing pictures of her and thinking, oh, she's really lovely looking lady and she looks interesting. And I don't know whether it was the blonde thing again, because I'm always seem to be drawn to blondes for some reason. And I just started to research her life, and I realized that, one, that not much had been actually written about her, and two, that she had a really, really interesting life, and sadly very short life, but a really interesting one.
Yeah, some people live lives that are just, long and maybe not that exciting. A couple of exciting things happen and there's not much to talk about. But her life, she endured a horrific car crash, the accidental death of a lover, several nervous breakdowns, an unhappy marriage to William Powell, the heartbreak of infertility, the heartbreak of infidelity as well, with Clark Gable. She had it all happen, didn't she?
She did, and the funny thing about her was that even though she had all these things, which is enough to send anybody over the edge, she just kept on going, and people would ask her about it, and she'd say, well, I just want to smile my whole life, I just want to laugh my whole life, and I just need to get on with what the universe has given me. So she had this really extraordinary outlook. It's very inspiring, actually, because sometimes if I'm having a bad day, feeling sorry for myself, and I think, well, it's nothing compared to what Carol did in 33 years of life. It was extraordinary, the things that she went through.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about the car crash, because I understand she went flying through the window. This is the days before seatbelts and all that sort of safety things that we have in cars today. But she endured some pretty horrific injuries, didn't she?
She did. It was just at the very start of her career, and she was just trying to make a name for herself. She wasn't getting very far, because she, by her own admission, she had a lot to learn. And one night she was out with a friend, and they were involved in a car crash, and the windscreen broke. Now, this is a thing that we're not sure exactly how it broke. Sometimes it was reported that she went actually through the windscreen. Other times that it shattered and that the glass came over her.
Right.
But either way, the glass cut her entire cheek, and there was a little bit sort of on her eyebrow as well. And she was rushed to hospital, and they had to stitch her up, and they did so without anaesthetic they were worried. Yeah, they were worried that if they gave her anaesthetic, that it would relax the muscles, and therefore she would, have a really permanent scar. Mm. So they did that, and she had to recover for quite a long time. And even in her later film, she could still see sometimes a tiny little scar. But she was very lucky that she recovered enough that unless you were actually looking for the scar, you couldn't really see it. And she was very good as well when she was posing for pictures, or when she was on a film set, she would tell the photographer, you know, shoot me from this angle, or do something to your, you know, to your camera, so that it sort of reflects off the scar, and so you can't see it very well. So she was kind of conscious about it, but she refused to let it ruin anything for her.
Yeah. She eventually had some success, but it wasn't until she met William Powell, was it?
Yeah, when she met William Powell, you know, he really fell madly in love with her the moment they met, and they started work on a film called Man of the World, and they, you know, they really hit it off, and they had a really good working relationship with each other. Even after their marriage had ended, they went on to make probably one of her most famous films, My Man Godfrey.
Oh, yes.
And that was a huge success for her. And they stayed friends, you know, for her whole life. But, that was a real turning point when she met him, and she went into the movies with him. She sort of, after that, she was a, you know, definitely a big star.
Yeah, I understand, they were very much polar opposites. You know, he liked to have quiet nights in, whereas she preferred to go out and dance and party. Was that one of the key reasons, just a difference in souls?
Yeah, I think that was partly it. I mean, there was a big age difference as well. And so by the time they met, you know, he was... I think, you know, you could probably say he was a grown-up, and she was still sort of, you know, getting there. And so she was still into partying. She'd go to the Coconut Grove at the Ambassador, and, you know, she was a real, quite a big party girl at that point, whereas he had got to the point of his life and his career where he was happy to make a film every now and then go travelling off around the world and, you know, take it easy, have meals with friends and spend the night, you know, quietly. And she just wasn't at that place. And the funny thing about it was that by the time she met Clark Gable, she was definitely at that place, and she almost had the exact same mindset as William Powell had had, and she enjoyed a lot of traveling with Gable and spending every moment at their farm where they lived. But at the point where she was married to William Powell, she really wasn't that way inclined at all.
Tell us a little bit more about the relationship that she had with Clark Gable. It started off a little bit out of kilter, blossomed, and was fraught with infidelity, and sadly ended in tragedy.
It did. Well, they met when they were making a film together in the early 1930s, and they didn't really particularly... Well, I wouldn't say that they didn't like each other, but they didn't think anything of each other. Mm. You know, it was just they worked together, and that was it, and they went their separate ways. And it wasn't until a few years later that they met again. And he was married, but he was married to a much older woman, and it was a marriage of convenience, and they very much lived separate lives. But they had never sort of got round to divorce.
Mm.
And but that... regardless of that, him and Carol really hit it off. And, you know, and they had a few explosive arguments. There were things that Carol did that he did not like. For instance, around about the time when they started dating, they were both invited to a party, and it was to celebrate this lady had just got out of hospital. She'd had a nervous breakdown, and it was to celebrate her recovery. And everyone was there, and everyone was dressed up. And then all of a sudden, an ambulance pulled up, and out got Carol Lombard on a stretcher. And everyone was like looking to see what was going on. And then she suddenly sort of jumped up and went, "Surprise!" And no one could understand what she was doing. And she said, "Well, it's a nervous breakdown party, and I'm coming as a nervous breakdown." And lots of people thought it was funny, but Clark Gable thought it was in the worst taste possible. And they had this huge argument. But then by the end of the day, they started playing tennis together, and they really hit it off. And from then on, they were more or less together the whole time. But it wasn't simple because, as I say, he was married to this other lady, and she was very reluctant to give up the status of Mrs. Gable, regardless of, you know, whether or not they were actually living together. And so she sort of went on for quite a few years, still refusing to divorce him. And then finally, they were able to divorce. He married Carol in 1939 during a break from Gone with the Wind. And it was really as a result of being in Gone with the Wind that he was finally able to get all the financial details together and get, you know, the divorce from his other wife and finally marry Carol.
He wasn't exactly the most dedicated husband, though, was he? I understand he used to run around a little bit, and that caused some friction.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that, you know, so many people have said that he had a habit of not falling for his co-stars, but just sort of, you know, having a little bit of a fling with them on the side. I don't think it actually meant anything to him. A lot of people say that there was only one person that Gable absolutely adored more than Carol, and that was himself. And so with that in mind, I don't actually think that he thought she should have a problem with it, because he would come home to her at the end of the day, right. And, you know, and he called her Ma and she called him Pa, and it, you know, everything was fine. But she didn't appreciate it, and you know, if she heard a rumor that he was flirting with someone on the set, or even, you know, having some kind of fling on set, she'd get really, really angry with him. And people have said that, you know, she would really go to town on him, and then he'd promise to be a good boy, and then that would go on for a few months until, you know, the next film came along. So it was a bit like that. And then the funny thing is, once Carol actually died and he went into this huge grieving process, he actually became the person that she really wanted him to be. You know, he was very faithful to her memory, and, you know, he never moved out of the house that they once shared. He did marry again, but he lived in that house. He's buried next to her, and, wow, you know, he absolutely adored her. So it was just awful that, you know, that he had behaved in that way when she was actually alive and he actually had her.
Yeah, and of course, the way she died in a plane crash, I believe, on her way back to see him.
That's right. She'd been selling bonds for the war effort, and she'd done really, really well. She'd gone on this tour, and she'd sold millions of these bonds, and everything was looking great. But back in Hollywood, he had just started another film, and she wanted to get back. Because she didn't trust him to be on the film set without her being there.
Naturally.
And so she was supposed to go home on the train. And at the last minute, she said, no, I want to get home as soon as possible. I want to go on the plane. And she was with her mother and a publicity agent. And her mum really, really didn't like flying. It was still quite early days of flying, really. And she said, no, I don't want to fly. And so in the end, it was decided on the flick of a coin. And Carol won, and they boarded the plane. And unfortunately, once it had stopped in Las Vegas to refuel, it took off and just went straight into the mountains.
Wow.
And that was that. And the awful thing was that Gable was in Hollywood waiting for her to come home. He'd, you know, prepared the house and various different jokes. They were always playing jokes on each other. And then he was waiting for the phone call to say that she had arrived at the airport, and he got a phone call instead to say that there'd been this huge crash. And at that point, he didn't know whether or not she was alive, so he rushed to Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And the story is that they actually had to try and, you know, stop him from going to the mountain to try and get up there to see Carol. And you know, sadly, there was nothing that he could do. She had gone.
Yeah, amazing story. And, of course, plenty of great details in the book, Carol Lombard, 20th Century Star, well worth a read. Michelle, thanks so much for talking to us once again. Another fabulous book, a fabulous and fascinating life of Carol Lombard.
Thank you very much.
The Cocktail Nation.
Thank you.
Cocktail Nation 8 Longe Leader Coucou Père.
Hey, how's it going out there? This is Tony from the Sharps.
This is Steve from Codename Carter, and you're listening to the Cocktail Nation.
Cocktail Nation with Alex Kashkin there, and Bond the Spy also played Quincy Jones and the In Crowd, plus Bill Owen, Desert Sands.
Swank. 10 times more addictive than marijuana.
Swank Advice with Coop on the Cocktail Nation.
I'm not sure when it happened, but at some point in our history, we decided to stop ironing clothes because for some strange reason, people decide that it's beneath them, or that their clothes are so advanced technologically that they don't need to pull out the iron anymore. Well, I'm sorry to say that you are fooling yourself, and we all have noticed your crinkly shirt. Sure, maybe the trendy thing is to not iron T-shirts anymore, and maybe, just maybe, you can get away with it some of the time, but I'm here to tell you that you can't get away with it all of the time. Fact is, most of us need to iron. Sure, some may be wealthy enough to pay for somebody else to do it, but most people aren't. Personally, I find it embarrassing that people have wrinkles all through their clothes. I find it very hard to not look at as well. It makes them seem not together. It takes away from them. Somehow they manage to struggle through the day. I can't quite get it together. I used to have a boss who never ironed his shirt, and quite frankly, I had less respect for him. It's one job before he goes to work, and yet he can't get that done. How can he effectively manage people if he can't manage an ironing board? Okay, so I've got that off my chest. Here are my top tips for ironing effectively and efficiently. Tip number one, inside out. Always iron black and dark garments from the inside out to avoid getting that sheen on the fabrics. It looks very ordinary. Tip number two, order counts. Iron cuffs, hems and collars first, and do them inside out to keep them from puckering up and losing shape. Number three, get it straight. Always iron using straight back and forth strokes, never circular movements. You can stretch out your fabrics, shorten the life of your clothing. Number five, keep it clean. Clean your iron regularly because you've got bits and pieces on the iron, of course, that will stick to your clothing and damage it. Number six, hang it up. Hang up your iron clothing as soon as you iron it. Otherwise, all your hard work will be done. Tip number seven, keep it separated. If you want to prevent the effect of ironing on the underside of your fabric, slip a thin piece of cardboard inside the clothes to keep the front and the back separated. Number eight, perfect pleats. While ironing, use paper clips to hold the shape of the pleats. Just be sure to iron them out so they don't damage your fabric. Number nine, invest in the right chemicals. Buy some good ironing spray. It makes the process a whole lot easier. And number 10, finally, don't skimp on the iron. Yes, you can buy a $10 iron, but that doesn't mean that you should. Sure, it's cheap, but you're going to be back in a few months' time because your iron failed, and usually on the day that you have a job interview. Trust me, it ain't worth getting the cheap one. Spend a good amount of money on a good quality brand. Some new music right now. Ixtahule from their new album, Call of the Islands. And that was my feature last week with a fellow by the name of Matthias Unaback. So make sure you check that out. Here they are, Ixtahule and Temple of the Snake God on the Cocktail Nation.
Thank you. Cocktail Nation, broadcasting from the center of Sydney.
You're a man of obvious. You're a man of obvious. You're a man of obvious. Never.
The Cocktail Nation.
Thank you.
Cocktail Nation, Michael Magne and Tropical, also Mongo, Santa Maria and Silent Island. We start off with Ixtahule, Temple of the Snake God. Lounge leader Coop Cooper. And this week, the passing of Castro and Florence Henderson. I think Florence Henderson, a little bit more loved than Castro. Her life story wasn't as ideal as the one she was part of on television, playing Carol Brady. She grew up poor in Indiana. She had an alcoholic father and a mother who left her when she was just 12 years old. But she was a talented singer. She could use her voice to entertain the family and to help make ends meet. And her big break came in 1951 when she was offered a starring role in the musical Oklahoma. And her voice carried her to a successful Broadway career. Eventually, she began lining some high-profile television gigs in 59. She was on the set of NBC as a Today Girl, and in 62 became the first woman to host The Tonight Show. And, of course, she became Carol Brady in 1969. The other person who passed away, Fidel Castro, not exactly as loved as one Florence Henderson. But you got to give him this. He was the ultimate leader, charismatic, quick to anger, a guerrilla whose Cubans were often afraid to utter his name, ruled for decades, second longest ruler in the world. The Queen only trumps him there. Because he ruled for decades, his impact and the perception of it has changed over time. Cubans before the revolution who were born see him as a transformation, a force for good. Those born later, especially after the Soviet Union started collapsing in 89, tend to view him as a barrier to economic opportunity. In life, often an enigma. Cuban families, he's often the collage of competing images, from inspiring young rebel to the out-of-touch old man. Time for our look at the World of Swank gig guide for pastimealbumclocks.com. Friday, December 2, Nutty's last show for the year at the Eastbot Lounge. December 4, at El Cid in Los Angeles, Tikiaki Orchestra. 8 and 9 December, Ricky Derrick's Merry Little Christmas Show at the Scat Jazz Lounge in Texas. And December 16, Martini King's hosting a very vintage Christmas at the Purple Room in Palm Springs. On Thursday nights, of course, regular gig, the Golden Tiki in Las Vegas, the Sharps. These gigs and lots more, check out the website cocktailnation.net, click on the World of Swank gig guide, and you'll find everything you need there. And of course, I'd love to hear from you if you've got an event coming up. Here's the Narco Lounge Combo and My Night with Sinatra.
Oh, He likes to taste the wine. He likes to see the ladies looking so fine. Fine bourbon and lobster, my nightmare Sinatra, pinochle in the bamboo rooms. We hit the sands for the big band tunes.
Exotica and Spy Jazz, this is Cocktail Nation with Cuckoo Pair. Thank you.
Cocktail Nation, the Sharps there, Ten of Madness, and the Narco Lounge combo, My Night with Sinatra. Coming up in a couple of weeks' time, we've got our very best of the best, as I call them. So we're going to have two shows, best of music releases and best product releases. So we're looking forward to that. Maybe you made the list. Next week, another Euro Spy special, and I'm going to leave you with Lars Gula now and Icarus on the Moon. Stay hip.
Thank you. Thank you.